Hi, everyone. Welcome to For the Love of Learning. This is Christine DiDomenico, and I am joined by my co-host, Simone. Hi, Simone.
Hello.
So this week, we do have a pre-recorded show, so you cannot call in with questions, unfortunately, this week. But our guest today is Mary Case. Hi, Mary.
Hi, everyone.
Mary is many things, actually. She is a school teacher. She's a music teacher in Canada. She is an Access Consciousness facilitator, and she is also the Access Athlete, which I think is so cool, and a parent as well. Those are just a few of the hats that I know of that you have, Mary. So would you like to say anything else? Tell our listeners anything else about yourself.
Well, I'm delighted to be here in Canada where I am. It's 4 o'clock on the Friday of March break.
Oh, you have a break.
We're all headed off into a week's holidays. Uh-huh. I'll be staying home for holidays, but everything that means, it's a nice break for all of us.
Yes, we teachers all look forward to that.
So the fun part for me is this March break, it's a little change from the actual teaching of school, but then there's all these other playgrounds that I have to look forward to. So a little extra time to do my training and some time to do my facilitating. And
yeah, you do a lot with body classes too, which I neglected to mention, Access Body Process Facilitator. So that's a cool thing you do too.
They're all great playgrounds.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, all of those playgrounds, you're really a teacher.
That's
a teacher
absolutely
and a student.
True. Yeah. Yeah. So today, the title of our show is Being You with Kids, or Being You as a Teacher. So, and Simone is a teacher. I'm a teacher. Was a teacher. I don't know how you want to look at it. Like Mary said, you're always a teacher. But we've all taught in the educational setting, let me put it that way. So Mary, do you want to start by just talking about what that means to you? I mean, I asked you to do this because I see just in our conversations, I am aware of how you are just so being with the kids and so present with them and being yourself. So tell us a little bit more about what that is for you.
Well, I loved your question because the first question Christine asked was, or a topic, was being you with kids. And I thought, you want me to talk about being me with kids? Like, how do you do that? And what is that? I was really puzzled by that particular question. And I asked Christine a few questions, but then I said, you know, the people I really need to talk to are some of my students. So being the awesome kids that they are, I teach grade 5, 6, 7, and 8, and it's all music based. I asked them a question. I said, okay, I'm doing this little blog talk radio show, and I'm really not sure what I want to say. Would you be willing to write down on a piece of paper the ways that you see me being me when I'm teaching you? So I said to them, okay, there's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. You don't have to do it and you don't have to put your name on it. I said, all of those things are optional. So I just gave them a blank piece of paper and they took out their pencils. Well, I was absolutely amazed at what they came up with. And I mean, you would think after 30 years of teaching, you would be willing to acknowledge, you know, how you are you in front of the kids. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't survive 30 years of teaching.
Very
but
true.
The things that the kids came up with were incredible. I mean, they were, it was, certainly brought me to tears in a lot of ways. So that was an absolute gift.
So what are some of the things they said?
Well, what was really interesting, they none of them were prompted. They weren't talking to each other. And I asked about 100 students. And I would say at least 75% of them said one of two things. One, that I was kind, and two, that I didn't yell at them. I thought, wow.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, it was really a big wow. And, you know, I realized that any time in my career of over 30 years of teaching that I've tried to not be kind or tried to, you know, be cross or angry in the way that people were impelling on me, I should be cross or angry, or the way I thought maybe I should be cross or angry, that it never worked. it always backfired. I always felt terrible. The kids always felt terrible. There was nothing accomplished by it. So anytime that I wasn't being me, it didn't work.
Yeah. Well, and what that makes me think of is that there's so much burnout in teaching that I wonder how much of that has to do with people not being themselves and just fitting that crazy mold that teachers think they have to be. That, you know, for me, before I found the tools of access consciousness, it was being in control was a big thing. And that was so not me. And so I wonder how much more space teachers could create for themselves by giving up all the labels and the decisions and the conclusions they have about what it means to be a teacher.
Yeah. Because so often we're told that we have to do things a certain way. Mm-hmm. And if we try to do them in a certain way, and that's not what is kind of vibrationally compatible with us, then, you know, usually it'll backfire.
Yeah. I wonder too, like, how much energy it takes to not be us. Like, I'm just thinking of, like, the situation, something that came up on one of the, we talked about it actually last week, with the Bad Mom show with Emily Russell and Sarah Grandinetti. About kids choosing their teachers. Now, for me as a teacher, I was always, you know, there's this weird sort of martyr thing that seemed to permeate the teaching world of, you know, and you see it in films too. Like, I can't think of the one at the moment, was it Boys in the Hood or something, where, you know, the teacher brings these ruffians and then they become these amazing people. Like, there's this story that you know, Dead Poets Society, like all of these things. And I remember watching those as a young teacher and going, yes, I will take up that torch. And it was exhausting, totally exhausting. One of the things that we realized or talked about last week was, like, if kids pick their teachers and you pick your kids, like, if you have the point of view that you are this martyr and you're going to change the world, like, how many kids are you going to get that are like difficult, you know, and I'm going to prove you wrong. Sort of that fraud patrol thing. And for those people that don't know what fraud patrol is, it's that those people that you meet, particularly like in it's most obvious, I guess, in the healing fields where medicine, wherever you are, you know, and they come to you, I have tried everything, but I know you are the one.
And
really they have, and then they tell you they have no money to pay you on top of that. And they're just there to prove you wrong. And I wonder how much of that we actually invite in when we have a point of view about something like that, you know, as a teacher. So anyway, that was my soapbox.
Well, I never thought about really the fraud patrol of teaching. That's brilliant. I mean, how often are other teachers trying to make us wrong, and we're trying to make ourselves wrong, and the kids are trying to make ourselves wrong. But if we present ourselves as space, and we have no judgments and we're in total allowance of the students, then you can't be fraud patrol. There's nothing for fraud patrol to latch onto.
There's no room for it. No. That's actually, thank you for that. It's a great awareness.
Yeah, cool.
I went to visit one of my student teachers today. I'm supervising student teachers. And it's interesting to see how this young woman is so much space with the kids. And then how the other teachers that have been there a long time are not so much. And they're all working together, too, in one big gym. And it's so clear how there's this intensity of power and control from the teachers that have been doing this a while, where the student teacher is so much space. And one of the things I'm really kind of conveying to my student teachers is, you know, I think they start molding themselves to that, thinking that's the way it should be. So what would it take for them to see that there's a different possibility of being with kids, you know, like being yourself instead of the rigidity of, you know, one school I go to, it's like a boot camp. You know, and they have a lot of kids, I have to say that. But even with a lot of kids, what if you don't have to have it set up that way in such a controlling way, and and just have more space for you and more space for the kids to be them? Because there's not that space for the kids to be them at all. Oh, my gosh. No. Really?
So, Mary, I'm intrigued, like, having taught for 30 years, how did you, like, not buy into all those projections and expectations of whether it was other teachers or parents or kids, or like, how did you, I want to say, how did you stay being you? It's a funny question.
Well, I wasn't always perfect. That's for sure. There are plenty of times that I was in space and I'd made choices, and, you know, it's always a journey, certainly since Access Consciousness, which has been a kind of in my world 7-8 years now. I feel like I teach from that space most of the time. But the thing is, it's not always modeled to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, where in your life have you actually been with someone who doesn't judge you, or who is space, or allows you to be you? You know, so, I mean, and I've always just had a lot of fun with the kids. That's just, I mean, that's being, I'm crazy and I laugh a lot, and I'm not afraid if I kind of do mess up. I just say, well, that didn't work very well. And, you know, kids are very forgiving. I'm not afraid to say, you know, guys, it wasn't a great day for me yesterday. I might want to change a few things here. And the kids go, yeah, okay, cool. You know, so it's not about getting it perfect. It's just about, you know, having that willingness to actually be you.
Yeah. And what I love about that is, like, when you are willing to be vulnerable about, you know, messing up or not being perfect, or it empowers them so much to know that it's okay if you mess up. Like, it's okay. Like, you know, and you sort of figure it out and you carry on, and, you know, and yeah, I just remember, like, kids just being so grateful when I'd be like, I was wrong.
Yeah, they love it, right?
Yeah.
You're wrong, you're right.
there doesn't, I think that is such a gift, because there isn't a lot of that either, in that you can be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to mess up. And to acknowledge that to kids, I have seen that too, is does give them permission not to be perfect.
They're themselves as well. If they see that the teacher is willing to acknowledge that they're not perfect, mm-hmm. then they think, okay, well, maybe I don't have to be perfect all the time.
Yeah. And I think then they do take more risks. They're more willing to try new things and stay with something that maybe they don't get it right from the beginning. But they're willing to continue doing whatever that activity is, or trying something, even if they're not successful right away. Because mm-hmm. I have seen kids where as soon as they're not successful, they stop, because there has been this ingrained point of view that you should be the best. You should get it. You can't make a mistake. So being that space, and I'm just wondering too, if you could, well, what Mary and Simone are talking about is, like, what does that mean to be space? For some people that are listening, maybe they haven't heard that concept before. And space is that place of no judgment, that willingness to be yourself, to make mistakes, to just relax into whatever you're doing, whether it's teaching or anything, parenting. And that, to me, was one of the biggest freedoms I gave myself, was to just freaking relax. Mm-hmm. And I found that at the end of my teaching, the last year, there was even more of that, when there was not this I guess there was an energy before of having to prove something or be something for kids. And the last year of my teaching in the public school, I just was so much more relaxed. And I thought to myself, and I had a lot more fun too. And I thought to myself, well, why weren't you being this all along? And I did change a lot over the course of my career. And I could see that there could have been even more space that I could have been with myself and kids.
So I'm just curious, because I come from a strange background in teaching, where I've always taught, well, mostly at a school where there were rules, but it was much more relaxed than a regular, you know, public or private school. You know, you didn't grade kids until they got to their exam levels. You didn't, you know, if they were being a jerk, you just said, go and play outside. So with the sort of rules and form and structure of like the systems you worked in, like how did you create that space with choice and like just giving kids more freedom and allowing them to be more of them? Like what is it that you instituted to create that?
Yeah, that is not always easy because you're working within, is it system or structure? Christine, you can correct me there.
Well, schools tend to be a structure.
So you're working within those structures, and sometimes you do have to play a role. Yeah. So there's certain ways that, you know, that organization, Christine and I talked before about order and organization and control and all those variables. There's a certain order that is sometimes required or organization that's required. So I find giving the students as much choice as I can possibly allow for helps a lot. So yes, I am required to come up with some grades for them because there are formal report cards and parents and the education system require these formal report cards. So that is required. So what I have been doing in the last 5 or 6 years is giving them a lot of choice. Okay, would you like to record this at home? Put it on a USB stick and submit your musical selections that you're required to learn that way. That way they can do it 25, 100 times if they need to until they're satisfied with it. Or would you like to do it live? Or would you like to do it on lunch hour or on a recess? Or would you like to do it in sections? So they know that I'm still required to have this mark from them and they still have this target of what they're going to strive for, but how we get there is variable. So that's one way I find that has helped a lot.
Yeah. So with that choice, what do you notice when you went from, you know, maybe before Access, I don't know if you gave them choice before Access, but from where you used to teach and like when you started implementing choice and like different Access tools, like what did you find was the difference with the kids?
The students are way less stressed, like, you know, from whatever stress means, but from their point of view, they feel so much more relaxed. It's like, sometimes they'll even say to me like, wow, you mean like we have a choice? Yeah. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we did this theory assignment in class and there's some curriculum that I was required to cover and I taught the theory assignment and then they were required to hand it in. But I didn't really need the marks because the report cards had already been submitted. So I said, okay, here's the deal. You have a choice. You can finish this if you'd like to, because you might learn something. Or you could not finish it. You can hand it in if you want, if you'd like me to mark it. Or you don't have to hand it in. It's your choice.
Wow.
Afterwards, this one little sweetie in grade 7 comes up to me, looks at me, says, I get to choose? And the look on his face was so precious. I mean, I am learning all the time myself as a teacher. And from that conversation, that small conversation, I thought, you know, how much more choice can I give these kids that I've not given them so far?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a dance for me as a teacher, even after teaching 30 years. And that's why it's so fresh and I love it so much, yeah. Is because every day there's something new that I learn or new awarenesses. It's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with this awareness? And kids are changing. And now what am I going to do with this awareness? And what am I going to do with this? And what do I have to change? And what's working and what's not working? And it's a game.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that for me too was what kept me excited in teaching. Was there wasn't really anyone making me do anything specific, and it just was me being curious about what else we could do that would be fun for the kids or different, and we created some really cool programs in physical education with the kids coming from that point of view.
I'm really, really curious because, like, you guys, like, Christine, you were in the States, and Mary, you were up in Canada. And I sometimes go on the British system just to, like, to see what jobs are out there. And I have a friend who used to work at Summerhill with me and now works at a regular comprehensive. In the stress that is placed on teachers in the British system to get to this bar, and like it's just the amount of teachers that are leaving teaching in the UK, they're desperately recruiting because they just can't keep them long enough because they just burn out like crazy. But it really isn't the kids, it isn't the teaching, it's the pressure of your kid or this your kids, your students have to perform, and if they don't perform at this level, it is your fault. So, like, did you experience the same sort of thing, or is it more relaxed? Or
I know in the US it's not more relaxed. In my field, because of what I teach, there was not the pressure of that. But in the academics, it was huge, huge pressure. And so, and I think that's what creates teachers believing that they have to do certain things and be a certain way with the kids, and so demanding. Which, what if it was the opposite, that if you actually were being you and relaxed and asking questions and using the tools of access to create more awareness around everything that's happening in your day, that you could actually meet the goals that they have for you and have kids do really great on tests and have it all with more ease. But I see the opposite, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which isn't working.
No.
And I love that, Christine, that you said that. I mean, Christine and I are passionate about trying to get it out there. Part of the reason that we're doing these calls is to get it out there and say, you know, teachers, there is a different possibility. And, you know, we have your back. It is not easy. You know, there's in Canada, we have provincial testing and standardized testing, and there's a lot of pressure on teachers for that. I mean, my playground is a little bit more relaxed. I have performance standards to meet, but I don't have the academic standards. So there is a lot of pressure on kids. And that really comes more from the staff that's teaching the kids, because they're under pressure of, you know, what are these reports going to look like?
Yeah.
So if we can create more ease for teachers and more of them showing up, kids will relax. And then that's more conducive to learning. You know, what change can be created within that structure.
It's funny because I taught art. So again, like you guys, it was a lot less pressure. it wasn't when they got to their exams. That's because they test art here in the UK.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was interesting. But I actually kind of enjoyed like the structure and trying to go, okay, how can we cheat the system? You know, how can we make the structure work for us? And then when I was working at the Access Possibilities School, I was teaching every subject except for math for a great portion of the year. And there was no pressure for me to perform or anything like that in you know, the academics, but there was this sense, this thing I could perceive about the judgments about these subjects when I was teaching them. And like, you know, and I would have these strange thoughts like, oh, maybe I'm teaching it wrong. And what if they go, you know, they get a bit of it, and then they leave the school and they know nothing. and yet, I mean, I saw quite the reverse. I mean, the stuff that they remembered and the excitement they had about the subject rather than, you know, having to regurgitate all that stuff that they had supposedly learned, quote unquote. I had another thought that was crossed through my brain. Can you guys tell me a bit about the telecalls? Because that was really cool.
Christine?
Yeah, well, what Mary and I did a telecall called Managing Chaos in the Classroom. And what we talked about is basically letting go of the order, which is the all the decisions that we have about how we have to do the things, what we have to do, how we have to be, and allow the chaos of creation to show up. Because order doesn't actually create. It maybe have a little bit of order, but chaos, which is not chaotic, and it's not being disorganized, it's not having a fixed point of view about how anything will be or how you have to do anything. So being coming from that place of chaos can create more ease. It can create kids doing really well on tests. It can create kids being empowered to actually want to choose something greater, which I think is something that's greatly lacking in the whole, I'm going to say the whole world, that yes. Lack of empowering kids. Like I mentioned this on one of our other shows, how somebody told me about parents are giving their kids webcams to put in their dorm rooms so that the parents can wake them up in the morning to make sure they get to class on time.
Yep.
And I was just flabbergasted by that. So It's like, what can we be for kids that will actually empower them to want to learn something new, to make choices that are going to create something more for them instead of something less? Because if we don't empower them, eventually we're not going to be there holding their hand and they're going to make choices. And maybe there'll be great choices. Maybe they will work out well, and maybe they won't.
Well, that's the funny thing is, like, having taught at a school where there was very few sort of rules, if you will. I mean, there were rules like you had to be under 10 to have two or more people on the trampoline, or, you know, sort of safety rules. And, you know, if you were a jerk to somebody, then yeah, you would get in trouble. But, a lot of the time, because the kids had to make choices all the time in their daily lives and choose what they were going to do. What am I going to eat? Where am I going to go? Am I going to eat? Do I feel like eating? Do I run around outside? Do I want to go to the classroom? So there was this constantly choice. And sometimes they would choose to be bored, and they would come into your classroom and they'd tell you that they were bored. And at first, this really freaked me out as a teacher. I said, the child can't be bored. That's not allowed. And so I would, you know, desperately find something for them to do. And then I realized, actually, that's okay. You can be bored. That's your choice, actually. And it was amazing to watch these kids. They went through puberty actually really quickly, in the sense of, you know, that typical teenage, like, thing. It was probably only a year or two. And then they would, like, develop into this young person. And you're like, who are you? Like, wow. And it never failed to amaze me. And that choice, that being given choice, that chaos of, like, people would come to visit and they're like, oh my God, the children are free. Like, they're running around. Like, this can't be good. And I mean, time after time, I just saw these kids. Like, I went to a class reunion and I just wanted to cry the entire time, because these kids that I had taught were these amazing young people that really had a sense of themselves that I've rarely seen, apart from kids that have, you know, access parents or access teachers that, you know, foster that and empower them. So yeah, I vote for chaos personally.
Nice.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So what else? Something was coming up in my mind about being you. What was it now? I guess the piece about getting out of judgment, like, that is such a huge part of why we choose to not be us, not be the space. It's the judgment of all kinds of things about how education's supposed to be, what kids are supposed to get out of it, how a kid has to behave. You know, the point of view that a kid has to be looking at you in order to be listening, which is crazy. Or they have to be sitting up. You know, in my case, on the gym floor, you know, they have to be sitting up in order to be listening. And they're all judgments, and judgments don't create anything.
Well, the interesting thing is they also carry through into adulthood. I've heard adults saying, oh, well, you know, I don't like it when, you know, in a meeting, somebody is doing something else because they're not listening. And I'm like, well, I personally listen way better when I got something else to do. If I have to like look at you and like focus, mm-hmm. I'm gone. Like I've left the building. So, yeah.
So Mary, with things that show up in your classroom, like what we would call misbehavior as a teacher, how do you deal with that? How are do you be you with kids when they're maybe not on task or disrupting the class or doing something like that?
That's a great question. And it was interesting how some of the students, when they were writing their responses to me, they said, we know when we're doing something wrong and you don't get angry or raise your voice. So there's kind of a level of intimacy. Once you're willing to really be you and be that space we've talking about, there's like this level of intimacy where the kids know that they're not quite doing what they maybe should be doing or that they're disturbing the class. And usually through some kind of body language, we can fix that little nuance, or, you know, they may ask to go to the bathroom, or I may ask them to go for a little walk. I'll just say, do you need a little walk? Do you need to get a drink of water? Do you need a little space yourself? And honestly, I don't have a whole lot of discipline problems in the classroom that come up. I do have a lot of what we would call organization. So, because sometimes I have up to 200 students with instruments, and I'm the conductor and I have an orchestra. It does require a lot of organization. Or on a daily basis, I have 30 kids with 30 instruments, and that requires organization. So the kids are super clear on what I expect. So it's not when I'm talking, it's not like it's just a free for all and they can do whatever they want. And yay, we have lots of space in our classroom and I'm just being me. Part of being me is letting the kids know what works for me. Mm-hmm. So that's super clear. Okay. You know, guys, if I'm talking, you're not. If I'm giving instructions, you're not playing. That's what works for me. So there's no judgment there. There's no charge there. It's just like, you know, this is the way it is. This is what works. And if that doesn't work for you, I do a lot of like, I'll walk around the classroom and I'll just take the instrument away from them. Don't have to say anything. Don't have to make them feel like they've been ventured out. It's just like, I'll take that away. So you can't play that instrument, right? So those kinds of things that are in the classroom. But for me, what works is being just super clear on what I do expect. Mm. And I say, you know, there's going to be times when I'm going to say, okay, experiment with your instrument, experiment with this music. And there's going to be times when I'm going to say, okay, you need to listen right now because I'm teaching a new technique. And that's just how the music classroom works.
So have you ever had I haven't had many, but there's been a few kids in my teaching career so far where it's like, if I took my awareness off of them, even a nanosecond, it was like they were into stuff. So how do you deal with those little guys?
First of all, I usually sit them right in front of me. They're very close to me. Yeah, that helps a lot. Proximity helps a huge amount. So it's just not really safe for them to be at the back of the classroom. That just doesn't work. So proximity helps a lot. And finding out what they're good at. and what they love, and utilizing that. So I do have one. I call her my X-Men, and that's a whole other topic for discussion. She can be a real handful in other classrooms. In my classroom, we just kind of have this unwritten thing that, you know, I can perceive when she's just getting off, when things are out of sync, and I have this list of jobs that she can do. So it's kind of an unspoken, if I see that she leaves from the her usual section of the orchestra, she goes over and she does some administrative duties for me, which is really great, like with librarian type work and organizing music and taking care of instruments for me. So that's just kind of a given. So for the most part, she's been, you know, had a great year this year.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I love this conversation because, you know, some people listening might have been looking at it like, oh, that's easy for you to say. And, oh, it's airy fairy. But you are saying you have structure, you have systems or organization to your room, and you have demands that you make for you as well. So it's not all about just the kids' choice, because you have choice too.
Yeah, and I do want to say, I mean, I'm in a music program. It's an arts-based program, and I have, you know, high standards of excellence in the program. You know, now what has changed is how we get there. So it used to be I would want to come from a position of control, like you practice these instruments or else, or you're not going to pass, or, you know, all those evil things in the early years of teaching. And now it's like, okay, you know, this isn't working. So these kids are not choosing to practice at home. So we're going to do some lunch hour practices. So it does mean that I have to give up my time or choose to give up my time. And I bring in the kids that are not choosing to practice at home and say, okay, guys, sorry, we're not going outside today. We're going to practice this together. And it works. And then usually they don't really like to do that. So they then choose to go home and practice.
and it is a choice for them. Yeah. Your choice is to practice at home or to practice here.
Yeah.
Or in a classroom, it could be your choice is to be in this classroom and be quiet or whatever it is when I'm teaching, or your choice is to go out and sit in the hall or whatever it might be. It's still a choice. And you may give them, it sounds like you give them a lot of choices in your class, and then there might be times where, well, there's this choice and this choice.
Yeah, two choices.
Yeah. Which can be really useful as a parent, too.
I find, you know, whether it's parenting or you're in the classroom, if the kids are really, it's this congruency thing again, if they're really clear on what you expect, then it's like that stresses off them. It's not that we don't have guidelines for them to work from. It's just like, okay, this is what's going to work here.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of like, I always equate it with horseback riding because that's one of the things I know really well. It does become that sort of nuanced thing where, I mean, sometimes kids would come in and if they were being a jerk, I just have to raise my one eyebrow and look at them and they would be like, I mean, I never had to yell. I never, you know, that was never a problem. What I'd like to know is like, how have you dealt with like, if you see like bullying in your classroom or, you know, you see other kids being just cause I know at that age, at any age really, but there can be this meanness. And I know particularly girls can be really vicious. So what is it that you be or institute or create or like what is it that you do if you see that? Or,
you know, the music classroom is a great playground because there's more like space and freedom to be you. So I find that through the music, some of the bullying just kind of dissolves.
That's cool.
Like it becomes a non-issue. So if I'm aware that there is bullying going on in, let's say, in a playground situation, I mean, the classroom teachers are brilliant. They have tools and strategies that they use for bullying. In my classroom, that might be a situation where let's say one person was a cello player, one person was a violin player. I would deliberately organize a duet of those two sections and have them play together. And then, or I would really showcase. I find sometimes showcasing that person who is strong, who has maybe had been the victim of bullying, and just really showing their talent, sometimes it can really shift the energy in a very subtle way when the other people, maybe the perpetrators, see it and they go, wow, we never really saw that side of that person.
Cool. So
it's quite subtle and smooth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Because I found in the subject that I taught, because there was so much, you know, there was so much freedom to just talk and chat and socialize because you could create and do that, right? And so, I mean, I had this rule that if you're mean, you're not allowed to be in my classroom, you need to leave. So I was just curious, because, and obviously if you have something in your mouth and you're blowing on it, it's very hard to
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of distractions. Yes. But also, you know, I do say to the kids, I will say that's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, like they know if they've crossed a line or they said something, like, or I will say that's very unkind.
Yeah.
You know, and so they know where they stand.
Well, and that's interesting that you say that too, because when we were talking to I think it was Michelle Edhouse, she was talking about doing that with her boys. And because a lot of the time they hear it and, you know, it's part of their chatter amongst their peers, or it might be coming from home. And nobody ever says to them, that's actually what you're saying is unkind. Mm-hmm. So just having that little sort of like, hey, that's unkind. That's yeah. really cool.
And for me, it was creating situations similar to what Mary would do, is creating a duet. But I would create teams that they were with over the course of a unit. So, mm-hmm. And so they would develop different relationships. Right. By being as part of a team, because now, you know, we have a common goal here. And
yeah, that's very cool.
So mm-hmm. Rather than them always being with their friends and doing different activities, they would be put with different people that they weren't necessarily friendly with, you know, friends with. And I think that prevented, and sportsmanship was huge in our program, and really yeah. focusing on that and giving them points for those things. So it encouraged a lot of that.
Yeah. Cause a lot of the time people say, oh, well, you know, sports is really competitive and it's really blah, blah, blah. And I remember when I was a student teacher, there was this whole thing of like the case against competition. So either of you, because music can be competitive and so can sports. Like, what is it that you guys discovered about competition that maybe not what you thought it was? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mary, do you have something?
Yeah, in the music world, I for the most part don't choose competition. Like, there's music festivals, and in general, I don't find them to be healthy atmospheres. now they have, it's shifting somewhat the last 5 years or so, where there's non-competitive classes, but I still find in general it's not a particularly healthy, nurturing atmosphere for kids.
No, I don't remember it being healthy or nurturing.
What I've set up more for my students is we just do festivals, and festivals are occasions. We just finished a February Fiddle Festival. We had 240 students playing fiddle tunes all in the gym at the same time, and it was, there was, and I explained to the parents when they came to listen, this is not a concert. It's not going to be perfect. It's a day of celebration. So we spent, you know, 6 weeks preparing, and we did this celebration. So I find that way more nurturing to students, to parents, to everyone than competitive atmospheres, especially in the world of music.
Yeah. And for me, it was more putting the attention on different things that traditionally you would competition is about getting more goals or something like that, and we set it up so that it was more about empowering them to create different systems within their team and sportsmanship, giving them points for sportsmanship. So the focus was away from the winning of the game, which can get really intense, and instead, like, all right, we're going to get a point for if we make five passes before we score a goal. you know, and so they actually could get more points for all the other things than just getting a goal or something like that. Yeah. So
I think they could use some of that in Britain. The football culture here is, wow. Well, it's called soccer, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the kids are getting a lot of that competition in the extracurriculars. You know, it's lovely as a teacher, you know, you can make different choices, and then they leave the school and there is a lot of competitive sports, competitive dance. It's not always easy on these kids.
Yeah. And I wonder how much kids are allowed to be them in their life. With all the expectations of society and then the expectations the parents put on them. I wonder sometimes how much they are actually them at all. I remember one kid saying, a teacher asked them something about their free time. And he was like, I don't have any free time. Like that he was so scheduled that there was no time for him to just choose something. There was always an activity. And I even was at a meeting or class, I think it was, at this new wellness center I'm working at. And one of the women said, she was talking about her father and how much she wanted her son. She's modeling her son after her father. And I thought, well, how much is he being allowed to actually choose for him then? Like, there's no space for him to be him if he has to be like his grandfather. That has nothing to do with who he is as a being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
That creates some interesting things.
Just to give, you know, have people think about that and look at that. Like, how much do you ask your child what they would like to do, what activities they would like to be involved or are not activities that they'd like to be involved in, or how they would choose to do their homework, or how they would choose to wake up in the morning. You know, it could be anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the things that I want to mention is the bars, which we all know how to do, which is 37 points.
32. Unless they've added five more that I don't know about.
Never know.
Thinking of Shakespeare's plays, I think that's where I was getting that number from. So 32 points in the head, they relate to all kinds of different things. I believe you can go to, is it bars@accessconsciousness.com? to find out more. And the cool thing I find is the kids that I've seen that have had their bars run fairly regularly, like let's say once a week or something by their parents. It's just amazing the choices they can make. I remember kids that, you know, were in competitive situations and they just made a game out of it, you know, like it was no longer a big deal. You know, or exams, they just like, oh, I need my bars run. You know, I'm not going to study. I'm going to have my bars run. And it was amazing how much less they did have to study. So I think too, like, what if we could get the bars out there more for kids? Cause so easy. It doesn't require, you know, much effort. You just have to put your hands on there. You can watch a movie if you want to at the same time. The students I've worked with and have taught the bars have just, they're different people. Completely different people. So
they are. I just saw one of our Access kids, Vince Mattis.
Oh yeah.
Did a video. Amazing kid. Amazing. You know, he did like a 7-minute video and just, he was so free and just being himself, telling about, you know, what changed in his life, since his family has been taking Access classes. Just amazing.
Yeah. And even the kids that are kind of like, meh, you know, they're sort of like a little bit hesitant or whatever. Like, my good friend Ann Clark was saying that one of her boys, who really is not really into using the tools and he doesn't really ask questions and he's just like, meh. But when he's in a rough space, he's like, can I have my bars run? you know, like,
My older son, who I ran his bars years ago, a few times last week, asked me to run his bars.
Really?
Yep. I was like, whoa. And you know, sometimes it's just he actually went to an acupuncturist. And so the acupuncturist is saying things that he's heard from me. And he was like, yeah, he talks a lot about things that you've been talking about. So I that was a great thing to hear. Like, he actually heard what I had said. And I don't say a lot. I really don't say a lot, but hearing somebody else say it, then he made the connection. Oh, well, maybe my mom does have something valuable there. That's it's very funny. You get it when you get it. If you get it. Yeah.
It's cool. I had two kids in my bars class the other day, and it was just really neat to see them like learning the bars, and just like, they were so easy about it. And their parents were all stressed out. They were like, oh my God, I have to put my fingers in the right place. Mm-hmm. The kids were like, ah, this is fun. Do, do, do.
Well, and that's a really good point. If we don't know how to be you, watch a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, watch them just flip from one thing to another and not be in their head, and just choosing, not judging themselves. It's just like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to go do this. I love watching my grandchildren because, you know, they're a good example to me that, like, you know, relax, just be, and wow, much more ease. So, Mary, is there anything else you would like to mention, or?
You know, the last thing I wanted to say was just to be that willingness to be you, and also to share you. Like, mm-hmm. I find in the classroom that the kids really love that they know, I'll come in, I'll say, oh, I hope you don't mind, I'm eating my oatmeal because I just came from my swim workout, and, you know, and I'm really, really hungry. So I'm sharing with them that I, you know, training for triathlon. And that came up a couple times when the kids were commenting on being me. And the other thing that came up was that we just love it when you play your violin, as I demonstrate a lot. And it came up that they thought I was really being me when I was playing.
Aww.
You know, so just that willingness, like literally to be you, not just in your teaching, but all of you, whatever that is, you know, willingness to be that in front of the students. I think that's just a tremendous gift.
Yeah, they see that you're a real human being, not just a teacher, because I think they often just see you in that role. And I think I found I do the same. And I would see kids out, like if I would stop at the deli in the morning, I might see a kid with their parent. And so different. They're so very different when many of them looked so much younger to me when they were with their parent as opposed to in school. So, you know, and often we look at just what's going on in school and not at who that kid is and what else is going on in their life.
Yeah.
You know, we sometimes make decisions about their behavior or their performance, and we're only looking at what's happening in school and not who that kid is all around, you know. And I sometimes wouldn't know things about kids, like talents that they had, and then all of a sudden I would find out that they were involved in swimming outside of school, or they were a dancer, or they were a musician. And and boy, just having that information, what changed things. And just being able to have a conversation about that too just opens doors to having a different relationship with kids.
Yeah.
So Mary, what do you have coming up? You have any classes coming up or anything else you want to tell us about?
Well, it's March.
Definitely tell us also about the Access Athlete, because I know you have a Facebook page on that.
There is a Facebook page called the Access Athlete. It's a work in progress. But this, I'm taking a leave of absence for a week from teaching in September, and I will be as part of the Canadian team heading to Rotterdam to compete as a triathlete.
Wow. That is so cool.
Very exciting. So it's using a lot of the tools of access consciousness that I've learned to just to kind of get me there. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's great. And Mary's on Facebook, Mary Case, C-A-S-E.
Yes.
And the Facebook page is The Access Athlete, correct?
The Access Athlete, yeah.
Uh-huh. And Mary's also on the Access Consciousness website as a facilitator. Mm-hmm. She has all kinds of goodies, good, cool classes she's involved in.
So. And Christine, stay tuned, Christine and I, and maybe we can even invite Simone to create some calls in the spring.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mary.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful.
It was fun. And thanks, listeners. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.